You may have heard Matthew Akins on our show. He's the New York Times reporter in Afghanistan who talked to us about the ISIS bomb blast near the Kabul airport in August. And he was among the journalists to break the story about a misguided U.S. drone strike that same month. It killed an Afghan aid worker and seven children.
I spoke to the family whose house it was. They told me they had just lost 10 members of their family, including seven children. There was still human remains spattered around the courtyard. Took photographs, videos of the scene, and based on the expert analysis, there's no evidence that there was a larger secondary blast, as the military has repeatedly claimed.
Well, Matthew is now back in North America to talk about his new memoir of joining Afghan refugees seeking a way out and trying to get all the way to Europe. And yeah, he's part of the story, as in he takes the trip. We're talking fake identities, bribes, inflatable rafts, swimming across a border. Matthew's got to tell us the story, and he's with us. Matthew, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so this is a story of you and your interpreter in Afghanistan, who you call Omar, fleeing Afghanistan to get to Europe together. How'd you get that idea?
Well, Omar was one of my oldest friends in Afghanistan, and he had been an interpreter with the U.S. military and had applied for one of these visas that the U.S. government gives to former employees in Iraq and Afghanistan, but he was rejected because he didn't have all the paperwork. So when that happened, it was 2016, and he decided to take the smuggler's road to Europe, you know, the same time that this European migration crisis was happening.
Yeah.
And so I decided to go with him, but the only way that I could do that was to go undercover as an Afghan refugee, given the danger of being kidnapped or arrested.
I want to ask you about that. You say you look Afghan. I understand you have kind of your own globalization heritage story. Your father's Caucasian, your mother has Japanese descent, and your own family history is caught up in kind of racism and Japanese-American internment of World War II.
Yeah, my grandparents were in the internment camps. So that was something that was kind of in the back of my mind when we ended up in what is arguably a modern-day version, the detention centers where asylum seekers are held to keep them out of Europe. So I ended up looking very Afghan, and that's something that has been very useful over the past 13 years that I've been working in Afghanistan.
Wow, and your trip is full of, as you write, plan A's, B's, C's, D's, and E's. You had planned to get into Turkey together with Omar and then find smugglers to get you to Greece, but no dice for a number of reasons, and you end up going to Turkey separately. So first tell us your part of the story. You're not allowed in, and so you have to find your way into Turkey?
Yeah, and because I was alone at this point, I decided that it was better just to cross the border myself, and I ended up hiking through the mountains and woods and then swimming across a river to be able to rejoin Omar and then pick up kind of where we left off before we got separated.
And along the way, you had to burn your passport.
Yeah, on the bank of the river, I did that just because of the trouble I'd had earlier. I couldn't go under my own identity. Things got quite complicated. There'll be a number of twists and turns for readers of this book.
Okay, and so you find your way into Turkey. What about Omar? He uses a smuggler to get him from Iran to Turkey by land. How did that go for him?
He almost didn't make it. And they have to go up through the Zagros Mountains, which is the old frontier between the Ottoman and Persian empires. It's an area controlled by Kurdish gangs who smuggle all sorts of stuff, including people. And it's a dangerous road. And especially in the wintertime, you know, Afghans and other migrants often freeze to death crossing through these high mountain passes to avoid the police. You know, they got caught at one point by Turkish soldiers and beaten. But like many of these people who are determined to get to a better life, he tried again and eventually made it. And it meant that we could begin the next stage of the journey, which was crossing over the Mediterranean into the Greek islands.
Yeah, and so you have to find smugglers to get on a rickety dinghy to get to a Greek island. What was that boat ride like?
Well, we arrived on the beach at around midnight. It was dark, and there was about 40 of us, men, women, and children. And people were terrified. Some of these people, including Omar, had never been to sea before. Some of them had never seen the ocean before. So you can imagine how terrified they must have been on this tiny little boat getting tossed by the waves in the darkness, praying that they'll reach safety on the other side.
In this case, the boat does make it to the other side, and you end up in this infamous Lesbos camp. There are so many people in this camp, and it seems that everyone is trying to find a smuggler to get them to the next step.
The camp was built for not much more than 1,000 people, and there were 5,000 crammed inside there at the time we arrived. And there had actually been a fire the week before. There was a riot between some inmates. Fortunately, no one was killed, but it meant that people were now living in like little camping tents in the mud. People were lining up for hours for very meager rations. It was a humanitarian disaster. But in a sense, that was kind of the point of this place. You know, this exists to deter people from coming to Europe. They're forced to stay in these camps and have to wait for months and months and months to get an asylum interview. And that's really one of the things that we discovered about borders, is that they have to be violent. They have to be punishing to keep out people who are desperate, you know, people who are escaping war, who are escaping poverty or ecological disaster. So there's a kind of inherent violence to the borders that we rely on to keep people out.
Yeah. You know, there's one part where you talk about crossing over a border, and many people either don't have papers or they're carrying papers that don't represent who they actually are. And I think you describe it as a performance. Is that just how it is?
Absolutely. You know, this book contains a lot of different kinds of passing. In some cases, it's people trying to pass with fake passports. In other cases, you know, it's me trying to pass as someone without a passport. Yeah. Ultimately, this is a system that divides the world into haves and have-nots. The kind of smooth travel that we take for granted with American passports is just a fantasy.
Hmm. We're going to have to skip and leave out big swaths of this dramatic story, but eventually you find a smuggler and get to Athens, and then you have to find a way to get from Athens to a European country where Omar can request asylum. Tell us a little bit about your options then. One of them was to grab the underside of a truck.
Yeah, that's right. Some of the ports, actually, migrants will try to crawl under the undercarriage or get inside the container cargo somehow so that they can then stow away on board the truck as it loads onto a ferry. And this is obviously incredibly dangerous, but a lot of people were doing it. A lot of young children were doing it, you know, unaccompanied minors. So
wow.
We spent some time with them, but ultimately that wasn't something that Omar wanted to do.
Yeah. So I have to ask you a journalism question. I mean, this is not traditional foreign correspondent reporting. You have another name. You're posing as someone else. I mean, normally we think about a separation between ourselves and the story we're telling.
Yeah, it was a difficult call. I mean, there is a tradition of undercover journalism, and what justifies it is that it's the only way to get an important story. And this was clearly the only way to do it. And I do think that this is a really important story. But it was also my friend going. And that was one of the things that you'll see I wrestle with in the book, is where to draw the line. Can you even draw the line between being an observer, a journalist, and becoming someone who's actively participating in a very dangerous journey with someone that you care about?
Yeah. Well, we don't want to give away the ending for Omar and his family. But I want to ask you what you take away from that yourself. I mean, you write this in a very personal way, and how we all tell ourselves these stories, and how our experiences and the stories we tell ourselves about those experiences, they kind of make us who we are.
They do, and I think those stories are all interconnected in some obvious but also some very surprising ways. And ultimately, we are all descended from migrants. And the story of these people who are caught between terrible forces of war and poverty, I also have something important to say about who we are and the lives that we're leading in the West.
Did your own family history come into play? You mentioned grandparents being put into internment camps in the United States.
Yeah, and I think about their story as immigrants on the margins of our society. And I don't want to forget about that history or not see the kind of solidarity that that implies for people like my friend Omar, who are living in very difficult times. And let's not forget the whole country now is facing another migration crisis. And there's a new wave of Afghans who are setting out onto the same road that we did.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the end, as I was talking to our producer for the story, Karen Miller Medson, we're both parents. And so we have to ask you, what did your mother know and when did she know it?
Well, my wonderful, long-suffering parents have been supporting me and worrying about me for the 13 years that I've spent working in Afghanistan and other war zones. So this was tricky because I told them, you know, I'm going to be out of contact for possibly months. You know, I'm going underground. And, you know, there will be ways for me to get in touch if something goes wrong, and there will be people looking out for me. But unfortunately, I'm not going to have access to a phone or email. So, yeah, it was definitely nice to get back at the end and see them.
Matthew Akins is author of the memoir, The Naked Don't Fear the Water. Well, on behalf of readers and on behalf of your parents, thank you for writing it. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.